starting. I just started recording, but I've been meaning to ask you since I reached out to you. Where are you at in your life? I mean, this is a question that came to me this morning. What is life teaching you lately?
Lovely. I've been greeted with what's next? So probably a transition. I have two children and they are now in university. So that started even a year ago. So they're in their second years or last years. And so what's been interesting is that it's taken about a year for me to maybe process what's going on, and that there is opportunity to give it time or resources to see what's next. So trying to determine that. And what's also interesting is that it's not so much my pattern is a specific image and a specific way to go about to get to X. And this is more emotional. I'm like, okay, how do I want to feel? How do I want to be? How do I do that? That's always been along this journey too, but it feels with the idea that everything's going to be okay. You've got things paid for, some responsibility bags that I carry. Feeling as if I can drop those a little bit. It feels pretty open, but it's some emotional what's next for me.
I feel like I come to that point in my life often where the question is what's next? And sometimes when the question arises, what's next? And particularly when I talk to my wife about it, I'm always asking her, what's next for us? What's next for you? What's next for me? And she'll often, like the Zen master she is, she'll say, what we're just enjoying. What do you mean, what's next? This is what's next. Here we are on our walk, James. We're on our walk. And so then, like, in when she mirrors that back to me, it makes me ponder, and I think about, like, well, maybe there is no what's next. But like, as you're saying it, I feel like that is sometimes I feel like if I don't think about what's next, then maybe I'll end up somewhere that, okay. I'm thinking about somewhere that I didn't plan on being, and maybe there's nothing wrong with that. But in particular, like when you say what's next right now, there have been a lot of changes in my career over the past 3 years that has opened up more time for me and time to choose what I want to do with the time that I've created with myself. So my question being, what do I want to do with that time? And that's kind of where I'm at too. So it's interesting that you bring that up.
Well, I'm reminded of Joseph Campbell's invitation that our life is a hero's journey and finding our bliss. So I think that there is, for me, I'm looking for purpose and meaning. I'm changing the variables a little bit. I grew up in a family that did Gold's dinner every year. So around between Christmas and New Year's, we'd sit down and take out our four to eight things that we wanted to accomplish that year. And typically, I didn't meet any of them. So it wasn't maybe something that I was particularly excited about. And that's a whole nother thing. So I don't know if I'm trying to switch, like, okay, what's next? I am been built to be programming 101 was programmed to attain the goal, and it's about the destination. So I'm trying to unlearn that, and it's about some intentions and purpose and meaning and possible bliss, in Joseph Campbell's language, to and it's about intentions and maybe about how I want to feel. And I will echo my wife and Sage to say, yeah, it's here we are. Isn't this great? So continuing to learn that.
Continuing to learn that. Yeah, I think back to the last time we spoke. My daughter wasn't born yet. And you said, I was asking you about what can I expect? And I remember you saying, you know, like a lot of preparation and then a lot of, you know, doing a lot of preparation and then not really much action or something along those lines. And I think it was like, I didn't really know what you meant, but when my daughter was first born, she was sleeping like 18 hours a day. So like there was that. But also something you said was your wife and your children are your greatest teachers. And so I've been living through that over the past year. Carmela's 13 months now. And learning from her in tremendous ways, it's really been, I mean, I'm going to cry just thinking about it, but like she's, I started writing a book of poetry about her because just so much inspiration, so much love. I have to get it out in some way.
Wonderful, James. I appreciate your curiousness and willingness to learn. And so you can make what, you know, spend your time the way you want to. And maybe it's writing poetry to yourself and your daughter to kind of really soak in what is happening. And you're right. They're just going to be right for 18 hours a day or whatever. And like, okay, you know, how do I interact with this? And it changes over time. At least that's my experience. And we'll continue to do that for sure. But I'm kind of enthused and excited. I don't know how much time I did or continue to write poetry in a figurative sense. And yeah, that's just just my path and my learning and that which activates informs. And so back to the teacher idea is that, yeah, the kids and the wife and significant others have definitely been very activating and activating in pleasant ways and remembering what really is where I want to put my attention and certainly activating in pleasant ways. And I feel as if that's where I can learn a lot. So, and I can get, you know, go through pleasant and unpleasant at work, but part of me is like, I really don't care that much, or it doesn't get my attention that much because maybe I don't care. I don't know what it's about saying I don't care. It just doesn't get my attention that much. But with my significant others, it's, it can be a roller coaster.
Do you have an idea of what may be next for you? Well, like in looking at that question, you mentioned something about resources and I guess time. So what are you thinking as far as what's next?
Continued conversations and fortunately, which is learning. And fortunately, in the profession of this, you know, the psychotherapy world that I am with others and they share stories. I might share a story too, but I think there's some mutual benefit to that. I really enjoy that. So I will continue this. Some of it's by necessity, just to pay the bills, that type of thing. Want to do, you know, more learning. And I'm not sure exactly what that will look like, but I think I want to try and change some of the variables of what's been learning. I think more retreats, some different partnerships. I want to work on some of the body, some more body work. I started with a new therapist recently, and she's more of a somatic therapist. And it's really interesting to be with her. She really just reflects back what I'm doing with my body. And I've never had a therapist kind of do that. That's kind of on that growing edge of kind of still learning about self. I do that, you know, it happens fortunately professionally. And then the other time I have, how else can I partner up and learn more? Ultimately, I suppose, back to having a degree of contentment and peacefulness is maybe the intention, and develop relationships. I read a book a long time ago. It's The Hazards of Being Male. And I think the North American male has a lot of hazards. And I think I am programmed or kind of fall into some of those patterns. And it is kind of a little bit of more isolation. So I'm trying to figure out how do I continue to partner up and express myself.
What do you mean? What hazards?
I've done some travel. This is not, you know, scientific at all, but it's been about a year abroad, just kind of meandering. And I just saw a lot of men together talking and being together, maybe holding hands, a lot of laughter. And so if I could have more of that in my life, I would like that. I'll be a little binary here and say, I don't know as if, at least in my story or experience, and maybe I'm not seeing it right, but to taking time and pausing to connect. I mean, no one's holding hands. And it's not about hand holding literally, but I think it's just being together and intimate, you know, intimacy and intimacy. And I'm looking for more of that in my life, and certainly generate to our current relationships having that, but it's still navigating and balancing all that we're balancing, and, you know, putting a full work week in and being supportive to wife and family right now, a lot of family support. This is going to, I think I will have more time. And if I don't have my time, what am I going to do with it? How am I going to make some choices around this? So
there's a question that I've been bouncing around in my head that I've been using sort of as a pointer that helps. It's been helping ground me lately. I don't know why I chose the number 37 million, but it had something to do with some mathematical calculation that I did at some point like 4 months ago, but I came up with $37 million. If I had $37 million, what would change tomorrow? What would I do tomorrow? What would my life look like? So I wonder for you, like, in these things that you're laying out in terms of what's important to you and what's next, does anything change with those? Let's say if you had $37 million right now, does anything change? And if so, what?
I'm smiling now. I'm not going to blow too much up. I like the way things are going. I suppose I'm never afraid of working hard. And sometimes when I get anxious, I get busy. And so I've been anxious about money. And so if I had the 37 million, I wonder if that would change things a little bit. Actually, I'm noticing that already, that bag of responsibility about being a provider and a supporter and supporting my kids' education and my family. You know, I'm 53. I'm like, you know, I think I can start putting that bag down. And so I felt the 37 million in some ways kind of arrive. And so it's been welcomed. It's just a little bit, I'm still taking some time to get off that cow path. Is if I have the 37 million or if I don't, what am I going to do with my time? I'm not sure if it's going to adjust too much, but I might feel different. And so, but realistically, I might not, you know, put in the X number of client hours that I'm doing right now and have some more time just to sip the tea in the morning. Instead of some multitasking, getting ready for an 8 o'clock. So there would probably be a little bit more balance. It's interesting that is always available to me right now. I don't think I need the 37 million. I think I could do what I would perceive I want to do with the 37 million. Fear keeps me from doing that. And I will sit with that and kind of wonder about that.
Wait, can you say that last part again about I heard you, but I don't know if I understood.
I guess real freedom, just trying this idea on as well, is if I had 37 million or I didn't, I'm going to do what I need to do to take care of me. And that I have this idea that if I had 37 million, that it might change. I think I can make it happen wherever I want right now. I have the privilege. I am privileged to even entertain that idea. But maybe I don't start my day until 10. Now, do other adjustments need to be made? Perhaps so, but that's okay. Is it the time might be priceless. I'm getting back to that this idea of time is a resource that I need to start paying attention to. that I haven't in a way that more of abundance, not scarcity. Is that making more sense?
Yeah.
I'm challenging myself now, like, hey, don't wait for the 37 million to do what makes sense and brings joy and peace and contentment.
Right. And that's the question is like, sometimes it gets conflated in my mind and I attach money to my ability to enjoy or live in a certain way. And that is to some, in some capacity, the truth. Like you said, there would be more time to sip the tea in the morning. Of course, that's undeniable. But a lot of the things that I really enjoy don't cost any money. I play guitar. So the guitar costs money to buy, but once you have it, it doesn't cost any money to play it. I like to meditate. I like to write poetry. I like to go for walks with my daughter. So there's a fundamental level of like meeting your paying the bills. And that is, that's an important place to get to. But beyond that, like sometimes there's this, I don't know where it comes from. Maybe it's from my upbringing. Maybe it's from where I live. Maybe it's from media, but there's like a deep-seated drive to obtain more money. And there's, and then I ask myself the question, for what? If you know, to some degree, yeah, to take care of the bills, but if I'm at a place where my family can eat and we can pay the mortgage, and again, yeah, there's privilege in that. But beyond that, it's what am I wanting? What am I trying to obtain? By when you said you get anxious, you get busy. When I think about, there's like this internal drive to obtain more things. And in obtaining those things, what am I getting from that? If I follow the yellow brick road, that's why this $37 million, it's like, if I follow that road, what is there on the other end of it? If the things that I enjoy, and maybe I'm lucky to have hobbies that are free, but what is it for? What am I working towards?
Well, that's a worth the pause. Richard Rohr, I believe I heard him say, you know, the first half of your life is about surviving. The second half is about living. And I think I've always had, you know, I don't know when the half starts. I feel like I've tried to be, you know, live before, you know, trying to make that transition. But I think in some ways I'm on that crux where it really makes sense. And I am basing that a lot on money. I don't think that's necessarily super healthy. Richard Rohr this week, you know, he's got emails out of the Center of Action and Contemplation, talks about, I'm not going to do justice, but the theme of the week is money and our relationship with it. And it's really can imprison me. It can really imprison me and our societies and our institutions and capitalism, you know, nothing's all bad or all good, but I think we're out of balance, or I'm out of balance, and I've been out of balance, but maybe the hazard of being this white American male, son of an entrepreneur, lots of gifts, but the motto is he who dies with the most toys wins. That's been my first learning. So I want to keep with the spirit of childlikeness and have toys. My dad has definitely that capacity. I'm not biologically designed to be that. I'm just a little bit more serious. And I'm like, okay, well, if this is the flagpole I got to put up to be successful, then I'll try to get the toys. But my body's never told me that you can do that. I tried to go business school. My body said, you're not doing this. My heart said that too, but I didn't listen to it. So it's been a real back to like, what do I want to do more and learn more is my body's talking to me all the time. I just am still learning to listen to it. And that part of what I listen to, the first half of survival shift, are just some belief systems and some ideas. And we're talking about money here, among others, that just maybe I've been unbalanced on. So yeah, continue to learn how to live.
My meditation practice in the past has been stronger, and I see it like the gym lately, in that sometimes I'm going and sometimes I'm not going, and sometimes I'm consistently meditating and sometimes I'm not. My friend Ellis, good friend of mine, he's been on the podcast a few times. We have been doing challenges together. A couple months ago, we agreed to give up caffeine for 30 days together and then talk about it on the podcast. And just recently, we agreed to meditate every day for 20 minutes together and to talk about it on the podcast. So there's like sort of a community support there, and then I'm doing it with someone else. So just in the past week, I've been meditating, and I can see so much. When you use the word unbalanced, like my mind is so fragmented right now. In the past year, my daughter was born, and I also started a group therapy practice. And there's been a tremendous amount of work with both of those things. And I lost myself somewhere in there. And I started to find myself somewhere in there also. I don't know where, but probably when I was able to take a breath and I looked at just how fragmented I was. And maybe it was just when Ellis called me and he brought up meditation, because he said to me, you know, I know that you're probably meditating all the time, but this would be more for me. And I said, I haven't really been meditating lately. And I'm glad you called me, because I have been fragmented and I need this. I need your support in this. I need to do this with another person to hold me accountable. So I've been for the past week meditating, and in the past, my meditation can be, it can get deep in a way that where like, there's some, I don't know how to explain it using language, but it can be profound and still, and I can go places in my meditation and learn things from within just from sitting there. But that's, I'm not in that shape. I'm not in the condition to go where I used to go in my meditation. So for the past week, I've just been simply focusing on the breath, exiting my nose and entering my nose, as like a reconditioning to be able to sit for long periods again. And I could feel just over the past 7 days, it's like getting into shape. It's like starting to go for walks again, and you could feel the first one is not, you could feel how out of shape your body is. And then you walk for a week and 2 weeks and 3 weeks, and then the walk starts to feel easier. So that's where I'm at in my practice. When I asked, what are you learning? I guess one of my questions was, an auxiliary question is, are you learning from your practice right now?
Yes. And, I suppose it's just one of the practices. As what's next, there is some intentionality to be more structured and disciplined around, I always say, the three ingredients. I need a time, a place, and a partner. And so to be specific around that, I have that for days of the week, but not all the days of the week. And I don't want to be too attached to every day. Although, like right now, my wife and I are finishing Whole 30. It's our second route at this. I mean, I think there's many spiritual disciplines, right? So, and what can give me some insight? So part of me is like, I need my body just to kind of reset. And so I think food, you know, AKA Andrew Weil, is like, you know, I give my body the right circumstance, it can heal and know things. So I'm trying to do that in a, you know, in just an intake perspective. I am trying to meditate like you. I have had some moments where it it's very informing. What's interesting to me is why I'm not as disciplined as sometimes those positive moments or pleasant moments or insights provide. I don't have the consistent discipline that part of me, I think, really wanted. And I still guess I'm really even checking my language on this. What do I want? I want to be intentional, but maybe not so much goals. However, I do like the like Whole 30, where I'm hearing you guys practice, like, hey, this is informing. I will decide at the end of this how I want to have some balance, but it definitely is informing. It is kind of a reminder. And so I don't know if I answered your question, but specifically, yeah, a couple times a week, I do have a time and a place and some partners, and it's been wonderful. And it's open to the community. And I will sit by myself. I'm also like, just recently, maybe I haven't thought about this, but maybe connected with the Whole 30. I'm not listening to stuff when I'm jogging. I usually have podcasts and I'm listening to podcasts and jogging. That's been sometimes feels very spiritual too. You know, the knowing I'm hearing and I'm bilateraling some stuff.
Yeah.
It feels like it's really, really hitting me in different ways. But I just need, you know, less is more, and not turning on the radio so much when I'm driving. And, you know, these practices too, I think, are part of the,
right,
the general spirit of like, am I aware? Am I conscious? Where am I?
Right. I feel like the, at least in my experience, the addictive nature to consume and fill my experience with something other than awareness is so profound. Like, the screen time on my phone has been as high as it's ever been lately. And usually that's like when you said, when you get anxious, you get busy. It's like indicator, what's going on here? What am I doing? And I don't know, but I know enough to know that whatever it is, I don't want to look at it.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. I want to turn away. And I think that part of me offers a lot of kindness myself. Whatever might be perceived unpleasant, I can espouse therapy and all that type of thing. But when I go to my therapist, there's some things that I just maybe getting better, but just don't want to talk about it because sometimes maybe it's unpleasant. I mean, I think I'm hardwired to kind of turn away from that which is unpleasant. And maybe even the little stuff is harder than the bigger stuff. I think intellectually, this is big stuff. I will do it and then I do it. But the little stuff, the day to day, I don't know if I'm really kind of conscious of that. So yeah, I mean, I'm going to listen to sports radio or whatever. I mean, it's really, or other things that kind of activate me that really probably aren't healthy. So it's just been interesting. Another thing that's been interesting that greets me, and I haven't thought about this, you know, the Whole 30, I think that, you know, as I'm detoxing or changing, the body's just not quite, you know, I'm sleeping more. I mean, that's just a good idea. What's a 101, you know? I remember Dan Harris saying, or I heard somebody else said it, you know, you think like you're waking up early to meditate. It's like you're dropping 50 cents on the floor to pick up a nickel. Sleep. And so that's a little bit extreme, but it caught my attention. Okay, so what are just, you know, I always say the top six are hard, you know, sleep, water, food, you know, movement, breath work, paying attention, and connections are important. And maybe a seventh is adding is just what, you know, just healthy relationships to screens and the media, and what am I inputting in my body?
Right.
You and I have heard this for a long time, the diet part of the MBSR program, and I'm still, you know, trying that, and there's some good things to chew on, but I don't know if it's useful.
I was talking to a client about this yesterday, maybe it was the day before, that, well, I said it in the context of diet. I started with this comment. I said, you know, if If you read book A, it tells you don't eat food B. If you read book B, it tells you don't eat food A, and so on. If you read book C, it says don't eat food A or B. You know, someone who only eats meat tells you not to eat anything processed. Someone who only eats vegan tells you not to eat meat. So it's like there's, it's confusing and it's hard to manage and it's hard to, you know, there's so many different foods that do so many different things to the body. This is antiviral. This could be anti-inflammatory. So you want to get this in your diet and that in your diet. It's hard to get all of the benefits from all the different foods and be balanced in that way. It can be, at least for me, overwhelming. And I think about life, it being a microcosm or analogous to life in that what I was talking to my client about, life is like cooking Thanksgiving dinner. If you've cooked dinner and if turkey happens to be like the primary thing that you're cooking on Thanksgiving, let's say you have a big family and you're cooking 18 different things at once. You know, the turkey starts getting dry and you go to baste it and then you smell the toast starting to burn. And then you go over to take the toast out of the oven and the cranberry sauce is boiling over. And then the creamed corn is starting to dry up. So you have to tend to that. And then the biscuits are burning on the bottom. It's like there are too many things to manage at once and you have to use the indicators in real time to tend to it. It's the only way that you can work through that. I mean, there could be some planning and my wife would smile if she heard me talking about the list that I write down before I start preparing Thanksgiving dinner, because it helps me work through that meal. But even with everything written down, there's still going to be some real-time audibles. And so that being, it's sometimes it gets to be too much, and sometimes the biscuits burn and you throw them out, or sometimes you do something and some of those things get lost in the process. So when I think about, you mentioned these seven things, I can't repeat them, but there's a bunch of different things to manage. Lately, what I've been thinking about is the context of relationship. There's relationship to ourself. Everyone knows that that is important, but relationship to our children, relationship to our parents, relationship to our friends, relationship to our job, relationship to our coworkers. There are all these different relationships that we're trying to manage, and like Thanksgiving dinner, we can only sometimes manage them as they're indicated in real time. When you start smelling smoke, you look to the biscuits. If one of your relationships starts to indicate in some way that it needs to be tended to, and in your example, it was, you know, I think it was movement and breathing. So even within the relationship to the self, you can break that into seven things at least, a relationship to each one of these things, relationship to exercise, relationship to your breathing, relationship to your eating. So it just gets to be a matter of bandwidth. And I use the electrical box example. Your electrical box has a certain amount of energy that it can run through it. And if too much is running through, the whole system will shut down. So it gets to be like, I just have to understand that and be okay with the fact that sometimes the system is going to shut down and sometimes the biscuits are going to burn, because I've tried other ways of approaching this and none of them are working.
Yeah. I don't know if this is quite what you're saying, but this is what resonated with me is that, you know, I kind of feel like I grew up in a just world. And with that perceived justice or rightness is that, you know, there's rules and there's things that happen accordingly, and that there is some idea that you can influence things and control things. I think that there is that. And I think the real shadow side of believing in that is that when stuff happens, things burn. That's just life. You know, I can't control all of it. I got to make some in time pivots, and everything's going to be perfect. But, you know, making it look great or special, or, you know, that's my recovery from perfectionism. Jump a little bit here. I think I heard on an NPR story that one of the greatest indicators behaviorally around health and wellness is the thought that you're healthy and well. You know, we can do all this other stuff. But what it's really maybe doing is thinking that you're healthy and well. But if we get too attached to, you know, hookbook A or plan B, this is where the sickness comes. Like, there's a right way to do these things. And so, you know, we try to make the best decisions, but there are, don't get me wrong, there are some wellness practices. And yet if I get too attached and list oriented and anxious and want to make it perfect, which happens with me in my meditation practice, yep, for years, I got stuck around, I didn't even see those patterns. I mean, they were there. They're just such a part of me that I couldn't even see them. And that's really dialed down. Thank goodness I can just be on the cushion and pivot in real time, and I can attach to the outcome and allow and just surf it. And that's been a real gift. And I'm still practicing that in my informal real life too. So, where I put my attention matters. And if I'm feeling well and smiling, I wonder if I will be well. But part of my programming says you have to do stuff to be that. So I list my 6 or 7. I will chase some of those. And actually, it does work. It's not
right.
It doesn't. But real-time assessment of, like, is this diet healthy for me? Am I so attached to it, I'm making myself sick?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is waking up early to meditate, sacrificing sleep, and is that wholly better for me? But that's why when I say Thanksgiving dinner, it's like there are so many different things to manage. So, you know, one of the questions in the MBSR course somewhere along the way is what are you at? What do you like when you're at your best? And sometimes I'm reminded that when I'm at my best, I'm not trying to attach to anything. I'm not trying to. There's a certain level of trust. Like if I were to go into the Thanksgiving meal and just say, you know what, whatever happens, happens. I'm not going to plan. I'm not going to worry. I'm not going to do anything. Maybe I'll lose the entire meal. And that I would have to work through as well, but I probably won't. If I can trust that I, you know, historically, I've, you know, I probably won't lose the entire meal. So that, like, letting go of that fear of maybe I'm going to F it all up. Maybe I probably won't. And maybe I'll lose the biscuits and that'll be okay. But that's like, when you say getting attached to the practice itself, once I see that, once I recognize that as the ointment, oh, the non-attachment is the ointment. Then I'll subtly get attached to that. I better make sure that I'm not attached. I'll get attached to the non-attachment. So subtle.
Yeah, it is. And right. This has been better, but I used to be pretty anxious when I first started in this field, be with other people suffering and what to do about it. And so part of it is, like, I don't think I got into this field because I wanted to really actually help people. I think I was pretty selfish. I was like, I think this might help me. Along the way, it's been very helpful for me, but I think I hopefully have been supportive of other folks. But the point is that my early program is that there is a right way, or you had to fix something, or, you know, and so I just, I used to have to tell myself, just trust the process and just be, don't overthink this. it's going to be as it is, trying to bring some equanimity into this and just be with others. And so I'm practicing, not only, you know, I say I practice at work professionally to really do a good job when I get home, which is a challenge because it matters at home. And I don't know if when I get home, I can do a pretty good job professionally just being and not trying to work harder. And I think that's actually been why people keep on showing up. I don't get in their way. They do the work. I try to help that out, but I'm not really in their way. I'm still working that out at home. I my anxiousness, my fear, I got to remind myself, like, okay, it's going to be all right, you know? And if it's not going to be all right at the moment, it might be all right later. Back to this idea that, you know, it's something's really, how can I, you know, I heard that, you know, the greatest thing a child can overcome is their, you know, the anxiousness of their parent. And that they have to overcome. So I'm just trying to continue to check myself on that. It's hard.
Yeah. I am continuing to check myself without getting, that's where I think the non-judgment is supportive, is like continuing to check myself without judging myself if I forget or if I have a lapse of judgment. I really like when I process the 8 or 9 attitudinal factors, they're so balanced and they're so profound as far as like trust. Well, trust and non-judgment are the two that are coming up right now. Letting go, I want to go back and read them, and I have my own like interpretation of them. At some point along the line, I wrote up my own interpretation of each one of these attitudes, and there's a tremendous amount of wisdom in there. I'm looking at the time because I don't know what time it is by you, but it's 12:50 here and I have a client at 1. So we're moving towards having to wrap up. But I think about how we started this conversation about what's next. And it's kind of already here, as it always is. Like, what's next is what's next is already here. I'm re-engaging with my practice and having this conversation with you. And that's what's here. And I'm learning as I go, and that'll always be the case. And I don't really need to go seek and find. So what's next is what's here. So here we are again, Scott.
wonderful, James. This is, in your words and reflections and the way you hold things is informing to me, you know, the story I tell myself is I'm always going to be in recovery. You know, it's just a series of conversations and reminders. So it is a reminder. I'm picking up that, you know, connection, self and others, that's actually what's next. And that we're doing that, and it feels like that fills my bucket. It feels blissful. It feels purposeful. And so I appreciate being in your presence and with you.
Me too, Scott. As always, I hope we catch up again soon. It's been, I think it strikes that chord of connection. Connecting with myself, but also connecting with others in like, in a way that's vulnerable, but also like, profoundly informed, like the work that you do within yourself, your own work is, it supports us in this conversation to be able to learn together. And that's really what inspires me. And that's why it's the main reason I do the podcast, is to continue to support myself in these conversations where we're learning. So I appreciate your presence as well, and you supporting me in this conversation. And I hope to have you on again soon, but talk to you sooner.
Excellent. Thanks, James.
Thanks, Scott. Take care.